mathematics and geography. In the beginning of 1360 Hijri, he started studying basic Hausa lessons. He also studied a number of books on philosophy like Sharh Manzumah Sabzawari and Sharh Ashraq. Meanwhile, he attended Kharij lectures by the late Mirza Mehdi Ashtiani and the late Mirza Hashim Qazwini. In the late 1368 Hijri, he migrated to Qum to accomplish his studies in fiqh and usul. His eminence left Qum for Najaf al-Ashraf. On having arrived in Najaf, he began attending Qayatullah Khoi and Sheikh Hussain Hilli's lectures in jurisprudence and the fundamentals of jurisprudence. In 1380 Hijri, Ayatollah Sistani traveled back to his hometown, the holy city of Mashhad, expecting to stay and settle down there. In the same year, he was awarded a permit by Imam Al-Khoi and another by Sheikh Hilli, certifying that he had attained the level of ijtihad, that is, deduction of legal judgment in matters of religion.
Sheikh Javid, we are talking about Islamic laws according to Ayatollah Sistani. And I'm going to start this episode with this common question. And that is, in fact, we today live in a very compact places. And sometimes we have to take a bus, we have to take the subway station, and sometimes we are jam-packed into each other, you know, in the cars. It's desirable, in fact, to take a shower and to be neat and clean, but sometimes it is not possible, so people carry with themselves perfume. All right, so they wear perfume, especially women.
Yes.
Is it basically or essentially permissible for a woman to wear perfume in public?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Ayatollah Sistani is of the view that it's permissible for women to wear perfume. It is permissible per se, okay? Mm-hmm. But depending on the intention, okay? The intention is very important. If a woman wears perfume to attract non-mahram men's attention and to cause them to fall into a sin, it is not permissible. But if she wears perfume to be fragrant, okay, and for her own self, for her own sake, as she wears perfume because she likes it and there's no such evil intention mm-hmm. whatsoever about wearing that perfume, then it's permissible. There's no objection to the woman wearing perfume.
So it all goes back to the intention.
To the intention, okay? And it's better for a woman not to wear perfume when going to public, where there are men and they might get attracted to her, okay?
Right.
It's better to avoid wearing perfume. But wearing perfume for men is highly recommended. And of course, during prayers, even men and women both, it's good to wear perfume, okay? Now, there's a question about some kind of perfume having alcohol, you see? Because according to some religious authorities, alcohol is impure.
Yes.
So the perfume is mixed with alcohol, and whether mm-hmm. it is permissible to wear perfume which is mixed with alcohol. Of course, Ayatollah Sistani is of the view that industrial alcohol is pure. Yes, it's permissible. And even if the quantity, there is a big quantity of alcohol inside perfume, still there is no problem mm-hmm. Using that perfume. And you see, nowadays we are using, for example, hand sanitizers.
Yes.
And these are also actually mixed with alcohol, using these types of alcohol.
Or products of
yeah,
alcohol.
Products. Yeah. Hand sanitizers are permissible, And of course, there are some Shia Muslims who are still under the impression that hand sanitizers, because
yes.
they contain a high quantity of alcohol,
mm-hmm.
it should be impure. But it's not the case. Of course, Muslims can use those hand sanitizers and can stay safe.
I see. Sheikh Javid, is it permissible for a woman to wear collyrium or kohl, or any products of the sort and the like, such as mascara, for example?
Well, there is a difference between collyrium or kohl and mascara. Mm-hmm. According to Ayatollah Sistani, it's not permissible to apply mascara. It is forbidden, okay?
Mm-hmm.
As far as kohl or surma, or let's say then collyrium is concerned, because these are the three words which we
yes.
generally use interchangeably,
mm-hmm.
But they come from different languages. Of course, kohl is allowed. Collyrium, which is the same as kohl, is permissible, and there is no problem in using kohl. For women can use it.
The Office of Ayatollah Sistani is currently providing the following services. 1. Board of Istifta, replying to religious questions. 2. Helping the poor, needy, homeless, and those who have suffered losses by earthquakes and floods. 3. Sending books for people who want to understand and learn Islam. 4. Hajj delegation. 5. Sending preachers. Board of Istifta is a link between Ayatollah Sistani and people. It provides them with answers to questions pertaining to religious, ideological, social, and educational matters in accordance with the verdicts and rulings of Ayatollah Sistani. For more information, visit the website of Ayatollah Sistani at www.sistani.org. You can also ask your questions through the following email, english@sistani.org.
You know, we know that some women, in fact, try to beautify themselves by shaping their eyebrows and threading their faces,
yes.
all right? And if they do so, do they have to cover their face when they go out in public?
Well, shaping the eyebrows is permissible. Even for men who might want to shape their eyebrows, there's no problem. Women
mm.
can also shape their faces, and they can also thread their faces, removing the
mm-hmm.
tiny hair
mm-hmm.
from their faces. Of course, it is permissible. And of course, what is important for women is to cover their makeup, okay? Shaping the hair and removing and threading are not considered to be a kind of makeup, okay? It's not makeup, because you just remove the tiny hair and you keep your face clean, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Or women keep their faces clean using the threads. Things which are considered in common view as zina or beautification or makeup or adornment, and things like these must be covered from non-strangers. They should be concealed, okay? And a woman going out of her house should not, should not make these things visible, okay? If she may be seen by a man, then she should cover them. Otherwise, there's no need for covering the ornaments and the makeup.
But basically, this is not a type of ornament, right?
Yeah.
Like threading the face?
Yeah, as far as shaping is concerned, these are not considered
yeah.
zina. It's not considered
yeah.
zina, yes.
So they shouldn't cover their faces?
Yeah, they shouldn't yeah. cover their faces in
I
this
see.
Case.
Okay. Is it permissible for a woman to dye their hair? You know, or hair. Doesn't it affect their, wudu and ghusl, ritually speaking? What does Ayatollah Sistani say about that?
Dyeing one's hair is permissible, and it does not affect the wudu and ghusl, because basically it's not necessary for a woman to wash her hair for ghusl, okay? Mm-hmm. Because what is important is to make water reach the scalp,
yes,
the skin of one's head.
Yes.
And as far as wiping during wudu is concerned, if a person wipes with his fingers or with his palm near the roots of the hair or on the scalp, that's sufficient. But if, let's say, there are substances,
yes,
there are substances in the eye of wood, the dye, the color contains,
mm-hmm,
substances which prevent the fingers from reaching the scalp or reaching the roots of the hair, the parts which are near the roots of the hair,
yes,
then it's not permissible. And of course, one can see whether the dye has any substances or not, because once a woman dyes her hair, she can see for herself whether there are any substances left or not. If those substances are left and if they can be removed, she should remove it. Otherwise, according to Ayatollah Sistani, there is no problem in dyeing one's hair.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there is no objection to a woman dyeing her hair, and no matter what conditions she might be, even if she is in her menses, because this is one of the questions asked by Muslims, by Shia Muslims in,
mm-hmm,
in the Indian subcontinent, because,
yes,
they think that if a woman is in her menses, she cannot dye her hair. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
It is permissible for a woman to dye her hair even if she is menstruating.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. That was the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
The devastating impact of the Israeli regime's bombing raids on the Gaza Strip has been visible on social media for the world to see, with heart-wrenching images and videos of the dead and injured being shared by millions of people, sparking intense fury leading to protests around the globe, as marches in solidarity with the Palestinians have been gathering steam in many major cities. We now present you an article written by Richard Sadan, a journalist, writer and television reporter. The piece is titled Mainstream Media Bias: Israel Controls the Narrative While Palestinians Are Murdered. The Israeli regime's relentless and merciless bombings of Palestine over the last few days is becoming a massacre, the latest one that is inflicted by ruthless colonial Zionism. At the time of writing, reports suggest the death toll in the Gaza Strip alone stands at approximately 192, the vast majority of casualties being civilians, including Palestinian women and children. The number will have likely risen by the time that this article has been broadcast. Hundreds have been injured and tens of thousands more have been rendered homeless by the Israeli regime's latest round of brutal violence. And the Israeli regime, in spite of global revulsion, shows no sign of stopping. It knows exactly what it's doing. It has one of the most sophisticated armed forces in the world, and the carnage is intentional. In addition to the countless fatalities and injuries inflicted, vital infrastructure in Palestine has also been destroyed by Zionist bombs, whilst families in the Gaza Strip remain terrified at the prospect of not knowing where and when the next explosive might land, with nowhere to escape, nowhere to hide, and with no means to withstand the onslaught and protect their families. The devastating impact of the Israeli regime's bombing raids on the Gaza Strip has been visible on social media for the world to see, with heart-wrenching images and videos of the dead and injured being shared by millions of people, sparking intense fury leading to protests around the globe, as marches in solidarity with the Palestinians have been gathering pace in many major cities. But the only thing worse than the continued ongoing support of Israel's murderous regime by most of the international community, their blatant approval or complicity voiced or signalled either through silence or lukewarm, neutral and meaningless statements, is an equally compliant Western mainstream media. One expects to hear the usual redundant platitudes of describing the butchering of Palestinian civilians as clashes, whilst calling for both sides to take steps to secure peace from politicians. It's the norm. But these are the kinds of phrases we're also seeing churned out by media outlets in a 24-hour revolving cycle of lies. It's always been that way, and now it seems as bad as ever. Journalists and news anchors, who in theory are supposed to describe the truth and reality of a situation, are instead presenting the Israeli regime's murderous attacks, the murder of civilians and destruction of Gaza, as a conflict of two sides, hiding under the justification of balance as a reason for doing so. People have rightly called out the British taxpayer-funded BBC for being guilty of this over the last week or so. But in truth, switch on your television at any moment of the day and observe the coverage on nearly all of the Western mainstream media channels about what is happening in the Gaza Strip. You will see a different story being told compared with the disturbing images of the countless Palestinians who have been maimed and killed in recent days, which are being shared all across social media. There is no balance in the so-called conflict between Israeli and Palestinians. And any serious journalist knows this. Israel is illegally occupying Palestine with armed forces and weaponry, which is the most cutting-edge and state-of-the-art equipment. The Palestinians, who have a legal right to resist occupation, barely have an army. It is the politics of another universe to suggest that what the Israeli regime is doing in the Gaza Strip is part of an equal war of two sides. And the reality is, most of the world can see this and knows this, but the mainstream media, which still yield an incredible amount of influence, far from reflecting the truth of the dire situation in Palestine and the Gaza Strip, are actually seeking to control the narrative and present illusions as fact. But this is a grotesque betrayal of the truth. The Zionist regime is not defending itself. The Zionist regime is brutally attacking a defenseless people who are sitting ducks right now as we speak. And of course, we are now learning that Israel's narrative is not just being peddled by a willing Western media. The narrative is also being controlled now with force, as it is being reported that the Israeli regime destroyed the building which housed several media outlets which operated in the Gaza Strip. In much the same way as pro-Palestinian voices are silenced within social media platforms and censored, the Israeli regime's war on truth and the attempt to control the flow of information has led to those platforms in Gaza reporting from within the Gaza Strip being deliberately targeted by the Israeli army. in much the same way as every decent human being should be appalled at Israel's latest attacks on the Palestinians, all right-minded journalists should be appalled at Israel's attempt to prevent the truth of its brutal actions from being reported on from directly within Palestine. But the regime is seriously losing face. Millions more people around the world are joining the growing tide of voices condemning the Israeli regime's behavior and are siding with the Palestinians and they're demanding justice. Despite Israel's bombs, the Israeli regime cannot and will not stop the truth from reaching the world, and far more people reaching the simple conclusion that the Israeli regime is a violent apartheid settler enterprise constantly breaking international law. Vast swathes of global public opinion are now at odds with the continued status quo and are furious at the Israeli regime's ongoing murderous assault and brutalization of Palestinians. They're demanding that it comes to an end right now and that the Israeli regime finally be held accountable for the murder of innocent Palestinians. The Iranian Judiciary's High Council for Human Rights says ambiguous positions adopted by international bodies, including the United Nations, on the ongoing massacre of Palestinians by the Israeli army in the Gaza Strip are aimed at legitimizing Tel Aviv's crimes and encouraging their repetition by the occupying regime. In a recent letter to the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, the Iranian Judiciary's High Council for Human Rights called for serious action to stop the Zionist regime's crimes against innocent Palestinians. It said, inviting both parties to the conflict without any condemnation of the child-killing regime, occupying regime, or any reference to the right of legitimate self-defense against the regime, whose very presence in the Palestinian territories is based on usurpation and occupation, cannot only be considered as a step towards legitimizing the crimes of the Zionist regime in Palestine, but also a clear, systematic violation of the right of nations to self-determination. The Iranian Judiciary's High Council for Human Rights noted that the United Nations call for restraint on the part of the parties to an unfair conflict, while the Palestinians' elementary defensive actions are in no way comparable with the crimes of the armed-to-the-teeth Israeli regime, amounts to supporting the occupier, consolidating the occupation of Palestine, continuing aggression, and assisting in aggression in Palestine. It emphasized the constant breach of the basic rights of the Palestinians in the form of acts of aggression by the Zionist regime, including the intensification of genocidal operations, racism, Judaization, illegal settlement activities, forcible eviction of Palestinian families from their land, racial cleansing, and attacks on the Bab al-Amud and Sheikh Jarrah neighborhoods of the occupied eastern Al-Quds. The letter by the Iranian Judiciary's High Council for Human Rights also said the criminal Zionists are intensifying their attacks on a daily basis amid an apparently deliberate inaction of international circles and many countries who claim to defend human rights. It added, the silence and inaction of world bodies on such blatant Israeli crimes and the issuance of ambiguous statements which aim to legitimize the Zionist regime's behavior are grounds for encouraging the Israeli regime's crimes. Directly addressing the United Nations chief, the Iranian Judiciary's Human Rights Council said, while strongly condemning the savage crimes of the Quds occupying regime and indifference or implied consent of some countries and international bodies towards these crimes, the Islamic Republic of Iran's High Council for Human Rights persistently requires you, as the highest-ranking United Nations official, to use all the existing capacities in line with your missions and duties to stop these crimes and bring to justice those who have perpetrated these crimes, stressing that the United Nations Secretary General should recognize the status quo as a situation resulting from the violation of just cogens and compelling rules of the international law. The Iranian Human Rights Council suggested that the United Nations set up a commission of inquiry or launch a fact-finding mission and use all of its power, including Article 99 of the United Nations Charter, to draw the attention of the UN Security Council to this gross violation of human rights.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The Israeli regime continues with its airstrikes and artillery attacks on different parts of the Gaza Strip more than 1 week after it began its aggression against the territory. Israeli warplanes fired many missiles overnight into the different parts of the densely populated area. So far, more than 200 Gazans have been killed, scores of them children. More than 1,200 people have also been injured. Government buildings, factories, residential areas, and even media headquarters have not been spared either. In retaliation, Palestinian resistance groups have launched rocket attacks on Israel. Hamas's military wing said its rockets hit Israeli settlements in Ashdod, injuring several people. The Azadin al-Qassam brigades also hit the city of Nevitot, as well as a number of military bases. An Israeli battleship was also hit by Palestinian rockets off the shore of the Gaza Strip. The Islamic Jihad movement also said its military wing, Al-Quds brigades, fired a barrage of rockets into the cities of Sedrot and Nevitot. So far, 10 Israelis have been killed and hundreds injured by Palestinian rocket fire. The continuation of the Israeli aggression comes as Palestinians have called for more concrete actions from the international community against Israel. Prime Minister Mohammed Shataya said mere condemnations are not enough anymore. He demanded the United Nations issue a resolution condemning Israeli atrocities against Palestinians. Shataya said Israel's crime have to be punished under international law.
The Israeli crimes against Palestinians, which we are particularly seeing again in the current assault in Gaza, represents a long pattern of what many have understood as crimes against humanity. And it is a long pattern of Israeli policy that started with the Nakba in 1948 to basically cleanse the land of historic Palestine of its indigenous inhabitants. So I see the current assault on Gaza as a continuation of that policy. And I see it in the context of a very aggressive settler colonial enterprise.
The Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip comes as the regime enjoys unconditional support from its Western allies, namely the United States and European governments. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas is to blame for the situation. Blinken said he is sorry about the Palestinian loss of lives, but insisted that Israel is entitled to defend itself. Many construe Blinken's remarks as a green light for Israel to commit war crimes.
The West support for Israel has been implacably solid for decades for a variety of reasons, because Israel plays an important part of foreign policy, the U.S. representative in the Middle East. It's been framed as, you know, the bulwark against terrorism. I think that that's starting to crack as there are more voices of dissent. There are voices of dissent in the Congress. There's much more awareness on social media. So I am hoping that we're beginning to see the end of that mountain of support and a recognition of Palestinian rights and their need for their human rights and their ability to live a life with dignity and safety and opportunity.
Germany also supported Israel's attacks on Gaza. Separately, German Chancellor Angela Merkel condemned Palestinian rocket attacks in a phone call with the Israeli Prime Minister and expressed solidarity with the regime. Apart from what was said above, a UN Security Council session on the Israeli-Palestinian escalation failed to bring Tel Aviv to account for its all-out aggression. But the West's support for the regime in Tel Aviv comes as Israel has an obligation to provide for the protection, security, and welfare of the people living under its occupation, though the regime hasn't done that so far. This highlights the fact as to why the United States insists with what it calls peace process between the Israelis and the Palestinians.
The Israeli-Palestinian peace process died a long time ago, so this is just another nail in the coffin. So I think that the peace process doesn't exist. And a peace process requires negotiations between parties that are equally respected, that the more powerful party has to recognize the trauma of the weaker party. There has to be apologies and reparations and a much more understanding of the historical accuracy.
Prominent rights group Amnesty International has blasted Israel for bombing Gaza, saying the attack must be investigated as a war crime. It noted that the strike fit a pattern of Israel's collective punishment of Palestinians. Also, Reporters Without Borders slammed the deliberate bombing of a media building as a war crime, accusing Israel of trying to obstruct media coverage of its deadly attacks on the Gaza Strip. The U.S. approval of weapons sales to Israel, worth $735 million, is yet another proof of Western double standards regarding the issue of human rights. Many observers, even in the West, believe that the Western governments, most notably the U.S., use the issue of human rights and democracy as a leverage to advance their geopolitical agenda in different parts of the world, including in the Middle East.
Tensions in the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank escalated after Israel launched a heavy-handed crackdown on worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque in the holy month of Ramadan. The Israeli military pounded areas in the Gaza Strip, killing and injuring hundreds of civilians, among them women and children. But unlike the regime's other military campaigns against Gaza, Palestinian resistance groups responded forcefully to the aggression, launching a barrage of missiles and drones and inflicting heavy damage and casualties on the enemy. A top Israeli general has acknowledged the rising missile power of the Palestinian resistance groups, saying the Israeli regime is now faced with, quote, the highest ever rate of rocket attacks. In a press conference on Sunday, Major General Ori Gordon said Palestinian resistance groups based in Gaza had fired around 3,000 rockets toward the occupied territories over the past several days, surpassing the pace seen during an escalation in 2019 and the 2006 war with Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance group. In the meantime, violence has erupted across Israeli cities, with clashes between members of the Arab and Jewish communities increasing over the past week.
The violence within 48 Palestine alongside the resistance efforts from Palestinians all over Palestine is putting the Israeli regime in an unprecedented situation. Most of all, these developments display the weakness of the Israeli colonial project as such, and are also a danger for Israel's so-called security. Security, of course, meaning in the Israeli context, the successful continuation of the apartheid regime within 48 Palestine and the military occupation beyond. And the Palestinians in 48 Palestine have at best been second-class citizens. So, and Israel has used them for propaganda efforts to portray itself internationally as an alleged democracy with coexistence. And so this image is currently crumbling to some extent.
Also, the damage Israel is facing is thought to be much more severe when the economic impact of the incursion on Gaza is factored in. Pro-Palestinian demonstrations have been held in several cities around the world in the past few days, with protesters decrying the raids on the densely populated Gaza Strip. Protesters in the United States called for an immediate halt to all funds Washington provides to the regime. Calls for an end to the attacks were echoed by the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
The current hostilities are utterly appalling. This latest round of violence only perpetuates the cycles of death, destruction, and despair, and pushes farther to the horizon any hope of coexistence and peace. Fighting must stop. It must stop immediately.
Analysts say the Israeli army's attacks on the Gaza Strip on the one hand and the raging conflict in the occupied West Bank on the other will prove costly for the regime and will especially undermine its post-COVID-19 pandemic economic recovery.
The current events and the manifold proclamations of solidarity with Palestinians worldwide might actually have serious implications for Israel and for its economy. But it also needs to be seen how the situation will develop, because after all, it is the significant support of the United States, Germany, and the European Union that has kept Israel's economy and, of course, its oppressive apartheid regime alive.
Israel's closest ally, the United States, is also coming under fire for refusing to take a firm stance against the crimes being committed against the people of Palestine and blocking the United Nations Security Council meeting and statement on the issue. The international community's condemnation, together with the ramifications of the attacks on social unrest in the Israeli cities, would have bad optics for Israel, which is already grappling with political uncertainty amid the lack of a coalition cabinet.
On May 15, 1948, the regime forced some 750,000 Palestinians to leave their homes and villages and expelled them into refugee camps that still exist in the occupied West Bank, Gaza, Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon. Armed forces massacred entire villages of men, women, and even children. That pushed rightful owners of Palestine to leave their homes and lands as they feared losing their lives. Consequently, that provided the ground for Zionists to establish the Israeli regime. The Palestinians were to suffer further when the West Bank and Gaza fell to the Israelis during the Six-Day War in 1967. Millions of Palestinians, including those displaced since 1948, found themselves under military occupation as well as further Israeli expansionism in their lands. In 2020, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu unveiled his intention to annex the occupied West Bank with the support of the United States. The move is widely condemned as it is considered illegal and in defiance of international law. For many Palestinians, that is just the last chapter in a process that started with the initial loss of their lands in 1948. More than 600,000 Israelis currently live in over 230 settlements built since the 1967 Israeli occupation of the West Bank and East Jerusalem Al-Quds. That's while all Israeli settlement activities are illegal under international law. Every year, Palestinians reaffirm their right to return to their homes and villages in historic Palestine on Nakba Day. They hold annual rallies to commemorate decades of ethnic cleansing of their homeland by the regime to establish what's known today as Israel. This year, Palestinians and their supporters across the globe mark the day amid Israel's deadly aggression against Palestinians in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip.
The Israeli government is taking more lands in the West Bank. More than two-thirds of the West Bank has been swallowed by the Israeli settlements. And every day they are also taking more lands in Jerusalem. As we have seen in Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, they are kicking Palestinians out of their homes and lands in order to replace them with Jewish settlers. It will continue because the Palestinians are not willing to surrender to the Israeli to the Israeli policies of ethnic cleansing.
In a pre-dawn airstrike, Israeli warplanes attacked Al-Shati refugee camp in western Gaza on Saturday. 8 children and 2 women were killed, while 15 others were injured. Following that, Hamas's military wing, the Izzeddin al-Qassam Brigades, said it has fired tens of rockets at Tel Aviv and Ashdod in retaliation for Israel's attacks on the Gaza Strip. The Izzeddin al-Qassam Brigades also said they launched drone and mortar attacks on Israel's Kisafim military base. The group has announced it is prepared to bomb Tel Aviv for 6 months in a row. Hamas has recently stepped up attacks on Israel in response to the regime's aggression on the besieged territory. Israel's Ramon Airport, as well as cities of Ashkelon and Ashdod, have also come under missile attacks in the past few days. On Saturday afternoon, the Israeli regime also flattened the 11-story Al Jalla building that housed the offices of Al Jazeera and the Associated Press News Agency. Press freedom advocates sharply condemned the move, calling it a brazen attempt to silence journalists covering the Israeli military's ongoing offensive that has killed scores of people.
They will continue to do so because they are launching a war against not only the Palestinian people, but also against the media that's showing the real Israeli face and real Israeli violations of human rights.
Targeting the media organizations and journalists in Israeli military offensives in the Gaza Strip isn't an accident. This is systematic targeting of media in Gaza in order to prevent reporting from there and to create a cloak of secrecy around Israeli crimes.
Gaza and the other Palestinian territories have been simmering with anger over Israel's stepped-up land-grab policies in occupied Jerusalem al-Quds, as well as the regime's desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex, one of the holiest sites in Islam. Days after the regime launched a heavy-handed crackdown on Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque during the holy fasting month of Ramadan, tensions spiraled into a broader conflict between Gaza and Israel. Since last Monday, the Israeli military has been launching large-scale airstrikes against Gaza, razing many homes and civilian infrastructure to the ground. The regime's artillery and tanks have also been targeting the blockaded coastal enclave, killing and injuring scores of people, including women and children. Meanwhile, the Palestinian resistance groups have been responding to Israel's acts of aggression with massive barrages of rockets and missiles. They have also brought drones into the equation. Much to Israel's surprise, rocket launches have largely overwhelmed the regime's anti-missile system, dubbed the Iron Dome, and hit several cities across the occupied territories, leaving several dead and dozens of others injured.
So, of course, the Zionists have always believed that they have been protected behind what they called an Iron Dome, that missile defense shield that they believed would defend them from all attacks either from Palestinian resistance forces or from the wider Arab and Islamic world such as Syria, Lebanon, and Iran. Now, we have seen, of course, that this Iron Dome is more like an iron sieve nowadays because the amount of missiles, hundreds and hundreds of missiles that have gotten through and have landed, some of them in strategic places such as cities near the Gaza Strip or near Ben Gurion Airport in the occupied Zionist city of Tel Aviv.
Meanwhile, the regime in Tel Aviv has been under criticism worldwide, with many supporters of the Palestinian cause in Muslim countries and elsewhere holding rallies in solidarity with the Palestinians. As the exchange of fire between the Israeli army and the resistance groups continue, the tensions in the occupied West Bank has reached a fever pitch. So far, several incidents have been recorded where mobs of settlers raided and vandalized Palestinian shops or attacked Palestinian Arabs there.
They are so high up in the clouds, let's say, of their own superiority, of their own master race status, let's say, in the region, that they don't really believe in the possibility of resistance in the region really making a dent in the Zionist armor. And what we have seen now is that there is way more than a dent in the armor. The Palestinians have broken through this armor.
While the Israeli attacks on Palestinians have been met with international condemnation, the United States has stopped short of denouncing the regime's crimes. Washington blocked a UN Security Council meeting on the Palestinian situation and prevented the world body from releasing a statement on the issue, saying that such a move would not be helpful to de-escalation talks with the two sides. Washington's support for the regime has sparked an outcry inside the United States, too. Several Democratic members of the U.S. Congress have lashed out at the regime and slammed the United States' unconditional support for it.
We must condition aid to Israel on compliance with international human rights and end the apartheid. We must, with no hesitation, demand that our country recognize the unconditional support of Israel has enabled the erasure of Palestinian life and the denial of the rights of millions of refugees.
As Israel ramps up its attacks on the people of Palestine, such calls for its boycott are growing stronger. But how many more lives should be lost before the voices are heard?
The Light.
As the world continues to battle COVID-19, people are finding traditional and modern ways of remembering those who have lost their lives due to the pandemic. A public library in the U.S. is commemorating the victims with an origami project. The Greenpoint Public Library in Brooklyn, New York City, has collected 1,000 origami pieces since April. Inspired by the ancient Japanese legend that 1,000 paper cranes can bring well wishes or healing, the library aims to promote hope and a sense of solidarity. The delicate handmade cranes, many of them from recycled paper, are now on display in the library's lobby. The staff hopes that each and every crane brings hope to the community.
We made this for the COVID Remembrance Day event, month-long event. Crane, in many cultures, especially in Asian culture, it symbolizes peace, love, recovery, and hope. And especially in Japanese culture, Senbazu, 1,000 paper crane, is really significant. They believe that if one holds 1,000 paper crane, one's wishes come true.
The library has also asked people to come by and drop off their homemade origami as a memorial to the COVID-19 victims. It plans to keep up the display until at least the end of the summer. What was once an underground movement is now all the buzz. After a 17-year hiatus, billions of red-eyed cicadas are crawling their way above ground in the United States. These cicadas are known as brood eggs, and they are beginning to emerge from the depth of the earth in a dramatic fashion. These birds have been sighted in 15 eastern states of America. They are around 4 centimeters in length with unforgettable bright red eyes and iridescent wings. Experts say these insects don't hibernate. In fact, they grow slowly underground for 17 years before they emerge to mate.
There are several misconceptions about periodical cicadas. One is that they're locusts. They're not locusts. Locusts are grasshoppers. Cicadas are much more closely related to aphids. There's another misconception that cicadas are harmful. Cicadas are not harmful. They don't bite. They don't sting. They're not going to harm you or your pet, so you don't have to fear the cicada.
Michael says cicadas tend to thrive on the edges of sunlit forests where it's warmer. They live above ground as adults for about 3 weeks, long enough to reproduce before dying. They lay eggs inside young tree branches, which hatch a few weeks later to restart the cycle. This year's cicada class will bore into the ground and won't emerge until 2038. Peruvian zoo has showed off two baby crocodiles that were born through artificial insemination. The zoo in Lima celebrated their birth 3 months ago. Zookeepers say the two crocs are in good health. The American crocodiles now weigh around 70 grams each and measure 26 centimeters in length. However, it's too early to determine the gender of the newborns. American crocodile is in danger of extinction due to pollution and habitat loss.
Paris's Disneyland welcomes back the magic as it has officially announced its reopening on the 17th of June. The famous theme park is currently in its second closure since the COVID-19 outbreak, being shut for nearly 8 months. With over 17,000 employees, Disneyland Paris cancelled its reopening plans twice because of the ongoing pandemic. But now, as France has eased its COVID-19 restrictions and tourist sites are gradually resuming their operations, the park has released a date to open its gates again. The reopening of Disneyland Paris will be the first time all six Disney resorts have been open since January 2020, when Shanghai Disneyland first closed due to COVID-19. A French musician has come up with an innovative idea to end his pandemic hiatus, performing on top of a mountain in Swiss Alps. Tiho performed on a platform at an altitude of 3,000 meters. The 30-year-old artist braved sub-zero temperatures in April to perform. He also had to overcome his fear of heights. Tiho has not performed in public for more than a year due to COVID-19 restrictions. He says the lockdown offers him a good chance to become more creative.
I feel like I had a lot of creativity during this period because I was stuck in the studio and a lot of time to make music. So usually when I perform gigs and I don't have so much time to spend in the studio. So today, during these days, it's like better.
A music production company organized the show. The small platform was taken up to the resort by helicopter. It took 4 hours to install the setting.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The Chinese version of the Titanic has been created to keep alive memories of the ship over a century after its ill-fated maiden voyage. The full-scale replica will soon be open to the public. It's part of a theme park in Sichuan Province, southwest China. The construction work started 6 years ago, involving over 100 workers. Around 23,000 tons of steel has been used to build a ship, which is 260 meters long. Designers hope that it will attract up to 5 million visitors a year.
This ship is located in the west part of China. It will attract tourists from the world. We estimate that the number of visitors will be between 2 million to 5 million in a year. This tourist volume should guarantee the return of our investment.
Everything in the duplication, from its cabins to the doorknobs, is identical to the original Titanic. Spending one night on the five-star ship costs around $150. The original luxury vessel sank in April 1912 after hitting an iceberg. Over 1,500 people died in the accident.
Animals living in the Paris Zoological Park will soon be able to see visitors again after months of just interacting with zookeepers due to COVID-19 restrictions. The zoo is preparing to reopen next week with limited numbers of visitors and obligatory health protocols. During the shutdown, the park welcomed over 60 new babies, including baboons, penguins, and flamingos. Experts believe the reopening will reawaken animals' curiosity.
Par contre, ça va sûrement...
Seeing public again will reawaken the animals' curiosity. They also look at the visitors. Some are very interested. You'll see the seals when they're with small children. It's part of enriching their environment to see a little bit of people, of diversity. So it's good for everyone.
The park, which temporarily closed last October, houses 2,500 animals of 234 species. France is now easing its COVID-19 restrictions and plans to reopen museums, zoos, shops, and cinemas on May the 19th. Looking for a cheaper and more sustainable alternative to traditional lawnmowers? Chip may be the answer. Researchers at the University of California, Davis, have embarked on a project to test the effectiveness of sheep as new lawnmowers. The project includes 25 sheep of four different breeds. They are going to graze on a one-acre plot of pasture for 3 days. The process will be repeated after a month.
The sheep have been used for a couple of things. So they're as good as goats in reducing down the vegetation. So in areas where there is, it doesn't just have to be a lawn. If they're in their areas where there's overgrown and you've got sort of those higher fuel ladders, they can eat that down. But what they also do, so they can cut that out, but then they also can come around and after there's been a fire, they're really good at eating the weeds that come up initially, the weeds that we don't want, those invasive weeds.
Researchers believe that the initiative also has an environmental impact. With fewer mowers, there might be less emission. They also hope using sheep will help increase natural fertilization and nutrient levels.
Using unusual array of tools for a haircut, that's what a Pakistani barber does to rise above the competition. Ali Abbas lives in the city of Lahore, eastern Pakistan. He uses blow torches, meat cleavers, and even broken glass to do a cut. He typically begins a haircut with a blowtorch to take a bit off the top. He then uses a cleaver and butcher's block and sometimes broken glass to cut the lower layers. His style is proving to be a hit.
This idea was not a joke. One day I was thinking of doing something different. It was my desire to do something in a different way. Since I started this, my customers have increased. People's confidence has been boosted. When you're visible on a platform and people see you, people will say, we must try this, we should try this.
Abbas has been using this style since 2016. He says he has received a very good response from his clients. His peculiar approach has also resulted in TV appearances and fashion shoots. It's not an everyday scene for Londoners to see a whale swimming in the River Thames, but over the weekend, the city witnessed a small whale being rescued after it got stuck along the river. The baby whale was first spotted in the evening, becoming stranded on the Lock's boat rollers in Richmond. Rescuers worked during the night to free the 4-meter-long whale. After 4 hours, the injured animal was successfully moved to a safer location. A vet is now monitoring its situation to make sure it's healthy enough to be released back to the ocean.
IRIB English Radio.